Okay, so Christopher pasted in the agenda right above. So let me go through the agenda first. We'll do the introductions and reintroductions to meet everyone on the call. We're going to go through the status of current action items. Christopher Weber is going to present about ActivityPub and Mastodon, which has a lot of intersection with a lot of this group's efforts. Then we're going to go through the DID check-in and action items and suggestions for next week. Does anyone have anything they want to add to this? Okay.
I would like to briefly remind people that, you know, this month we're leading up to rebooting Web of Trust face-to-face in October, you know, on October 3rd through 5th. So we're going to be concentrating the next couple of meetings on items that will be, you know, under development or consideration at rebooting Web of Trust, in particular DIDs. But if there's something you're wishing to present that's relevant to credentials and to rebooting Web of Trust, let us know when we might be able to fit it into the agenda this month.
So I have a few more callers I'd like to identify before moving on. Anyone at area code 646?
I came in by Skype, so I'm not sure how I look, Kim.
Okay.
This is Lionel.
Oh, Lionel, okay. Yeah.
And it's been a while since I scribed, so I'm offering today.
Oh, thank you. That's nice. We have Manu doing it, but we'll certainly come back. Area code 216. We may be able to get you, Lionel, through process of elimination. Area code 972. Actually, I think that's you, Lionel, given.
972? Wow. Skype usually pulls me in through Arizona or something, but I'm sitting in Tel Aviv right now, so that sounds right.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's see. Okay, there's a few I haven't identified, but we'll see what we can do.
I might form and reform, so just apologizing in advance.
Okay, thank you. So let's start with the introductions and reintroductions. I wanted to start with, let's see, your last name was Hughes, now I'm trying to remember, Andrew Hughes. Would you mind introducing yourself to the group?
Sure. Hi, it's Andrew Hughes. I'm a technology consultant, a management consultant from Victoria, BC. Mostly interested, I do a lot of work as a member of Cantera Initiative, looking at new ways of using things like decentralized identifiers for general purpose identification on the internet.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us. Now let's go through the status of current action items. Let's see. Oh, the first thing I want to do is quick round robin to see how the current work items are going. Just you know, few seconds. Let us know if you're blocked on anything or if you need help with anything. Life cycle of verifiable claim. Actually, we don't have either Joe or David Chadwick on the call. DID, we're going to get to. Anyone want to give updates on the data minimization selective disclosure work item?
If negative update is acceptable, no progress on my side.
Okay, that sounds good.
I'm going to send you, Lionel, the thing that I sent to Kim on Friday, which was sort of these pairs of things that might be a good way of sort of talking about things was from this pairs perspective. So I'll find that and send it to you.
And also, let's use rebooting Web of Trust as a kind of anchor. This has worked for us in the past, Chris, so we can build whatever momentum we can towards an inventory, and then at the rebooting, we can run a session there. So that might really be a way to do it.
Okay.
That sounds great. So next action item is assigned to me, finish propagating new name and mission statement. I've given myself a deadline. I will try to get to that today. Essentially what that means is notifying a few W3C groups that, you know, here's our new name, here's our mission, let us know if you have any objections or anything like that. The mission statement is reflected on our W3C page, so I think we should be good after the final email notifications go out. Manu, I had an action item just assigned to you that I had extracted from last meeting's minutes, but the question mark is that I just don't know what that was. It was, oh, go ahead.
I think it was to contact New York Times and those folks, and I failed to do that, but it is on my to-do list still.
Okay.
So I'll get to it at some point.
Sounds good. And then lastly, the TPAC meeting, which I think Christopher just mentioned. Christopher, is there anything you want to talk about there?
Well, I just know that it's, you know, it's an agenda item coming up real fast. I think they have to have, you know, that we're interested in speaking fairly soon, but I don't really understand as far as, I mean, we have an opportunity to speak during the verifiable claims time that has been allocated to them, but then there's this one that where we get an opportunity to speak to the entire community for a short amount of time. Manu, can you give us a little more detail on that? And
sure, happy to. Moses is on before me, though.
Okay.
Moses?
Yeah, just really quickly, Manu, could you send out whatever you decided to send to me whatever you're using to invite participants in the fake news stuff? I will send invitations to a couple of Pulitzer, you know, awarded writers.
Got it. Will do. Sorry, Moses, that fell off my desk, but I will focus on that after the call and get that out. Thanks for the reminder.
Manu, I'll add that to the action items just to track it next on the queue.
Okay. Right, so TPAC opportunities. We have at least three opportunities for the credential community group at TPAC. It starts basically on Wednesday. So the first opportunity is Wednesday. We may be able to talk. Wednesday is where kind of like everyone gets together and the entire W3C membership kind of gets quick updates from various locations in W3C. So that is like you have 10 minutes basically to say something about what you're trying to do. You have to be very careful about what you say and what you're planning. It's a good chance to kind of give an overview. If this group wants to do something there, we really need to coordinate with the Verifiable Claims Working Group and Liam, the staff contact there, to make sure that the messaging's right. We have to kind of have a unified message going out. Again, it's going to be like, you know, between 200 to 400 people in the room, so there's no time to do details. You do a high level, you know, this is what we've been doing, this is how it's going, this is what we plan to do next, and that's pretty much it. So there's around a 10-minute window for us to talk in front of the entire membership there. That's opportunity one. Second opportunity is that we can run a breakout session. And those are usually an hour. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to give a more thorough update on where things are. We have typically used that time at TPAC in the past to convince the membership that, you know, the Verifiable Claims Working Group is worth doing, or we really need to think about, you know, privacy and security, and this is what we're doing to think about it. So that's a bigger forum. It's a longer forum, but usually only about 20 to 50 people show up to that. Finally, so those two things happen on Wednesday. Finally, on Thursday and Friday, many of us are going to be in the Verifiable Claims Working Group, And we should talk to the chairs of the Verifiable Claims Working Group to stake out some time so that we can talk about next steps, what's coming down the pipeline in 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, so that everybody kind of knows where we're headed as a community. So I think those are the three opportunities that, you know, we could take. If we can do all three, that's usually best. You want it to get your message out there, and you want to use every opportunity to do that. You pick up people at one of those things versus them not coming to the other thing. So there you go. Hopefully that's enough of a background there. And done.
Thanks,
and thanks, Kim.
Okay, I think we had, let me check the queue. Dave.
Yeah, this is on a different subject. Are we moving off that subject?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to give a really quick update on the credential handler API work item. That it's coming along. The polyfill implementation is coming along nicely. There's a link I put in IRC for any of the more technical people that want to poke around at the demo. The demo has been tested on Chrome and Firefox on desktop. It hasn't been tested on phones. You're welcome to try it if you really want to, but don't expect it to work. It probably doesn't work in Safari, but it might work in Edge. I'm just looking for feedback. Let me get the link to the credential handler API repo. We can put feedback on the demo here, but this is mostly for feedback on kind of the shape of the API and things like that for people who want to get into the technical details. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks. And to wrap up the action items for TPAC, I'll make sure to assign that to us, the chairs, and we'll talk about what we need to do there. So let's move on to ActivityPub and Mastodon. Christopher Weber.
Hello. So ActivityPub is a standard I've been working on for a while. Here's a link to the standard. And we've been working on it in a social working group. It's basically a federated social network system. So if you want to build an alternative to YouTube or Flickr or Facebook or Twitter and stuff like that, you can use this basically as a protocol for the different servers to speak to each other. It also includes a client-server model, so that you can basically build using pretty much the same protocol, mobile applications or desktop applications that speak to the server. But you can use either one of those without using the other. I think to this group, the server-to-server federation model is a lot more interesting. One other interesting bit about it is that it uses basically linked data because it uses the activity streams as its serialization format. So it's basically passing around JSON-LD using activity streams as its vocabulary for the system. So, it's been building off of other systems that have been doing work in this space and studying systems that were like OStatus and et cetera, but it is a new protocol, and it's not out of it's currently at candidate recommendation of the W3C. So what's I think especially exciting at the moment is Mastodon is about to roll this out basically as what they're making their main federation protocol. Gargren's on IRC. His real name's Eugene Rochko. He's the main developer. He wasn't able to dial into this call, but he's here. What's neat about Mastodon, I'm going to post both my profile and Gargren's as an example. You can see that both of us have been speaking to each other, even though we're on entirely different servers. It has kind of a Twitter-like interface. But what's exciting about Mastodon is, they've got about nearly a million registered users, about 850,000, I think, at last estimate, and they are going to be making ActivityPub their main protocol. So that's, a linked data federated system. and which I think is a pretty good basis already. But so I guess part of the question is, how does that, you know, I think that ties in ideologically with this group, you know, trying to allow for more distributed and decentralized systems. But what about the actual work of this group? So I wrote a paper that I'm for the Rebooting Web of Trust workshop, which I link to here. In that paper, I basically go through a few different ways that, you know, we can, so ActivityPub currently is kind of more of a traditional client-to-server and kind of node-based system. I wouldn't describe it as very self-sovereign at the moment. Right now, you register on a node, and if that node goes down, you don't really have a great way to move to a new node. The ActivityPub specification doesn't itself specify, although it provides a recommendation that points at linked data signatures. It doesn't specify that you have to use signatures, but there's good reasons to want to do it. Specifically, if you're forwarding messages, can make sure that it was really written by the person who said it was, and so on. In this paper, I described some ways in which, you know, I think ActivityPub and this group align. One of them is, you know, adding public keys and linked data signatures for the purpose that I just described, of being able to make sure that messages that pass around through the network are actually from who they say they are, and et cetera. And, you know, we haven't pushed it too far as in terms of, you know, I think there's even more that we could do as in terms of kind of being able to, you know, authorize people to do certain things with the linked data signatures and et cetera. If we end up, another thing that would be interesting from this group is that one way in which ActivityPub is still fairly tied to, even though it brings kind of a decentralized and semi-distributed model to social networks, it's still reliant on the centralized systems of DNS and SSL certificate authorities. So there's still kind of that core bit of centralization pinning users at the middle. And I think it would be exciting with the work that's happening with DIDs and et cetera if we could actually cut those out, which would open up two things. One, it would mean that users are, it would remove that centralized component, which, you know, sticks in the craw of many users. B, it would allow users to be much more self-sovereign and mobile, to be able to move between different instances, and possibly even kind of transition from this kind of decentralized / distributed web, federated social web model, which is still very node-based, to a much more self-sovereign and, you know, dare I say, somewhat peer-to-peer type model. And not to mention that if you know, public keys are actually on every actor's profile, you're actually kind of building a web of trust into the system without users even really realizing it. You know, as a user adds somebody to their, you know, and follows and confirms connections between different users, that could be seen as kind of building a loose web of trust. So I think that's pretty exciting. Anyway, when I wrote this paper, it was fairly theoretical, but the very day after writing the paper, Eugene wrote a pull request for linked data signature support. There's some really staticky noise in the background. It's gone now. But anyway, that's basically it.
Thanks, Christopher. And I notice we have Christopher Allen on the queue.
Yeah, middle name and last name, you know, so that it's still amusing. So I wanted to ask kind of where the more specific to the Mastodon community, you know, what would it take to kind of get them to begin to, for instance, participate in Rebooting Web of Trust or accept broadly, you know, at least the goal of moving toward a decentralized PKI and things, or you know, where's the low-hanging fruit? What, you know, Is it you know, is it JSON-LD? Is it verifiable claims? Is it DIDs? Is it Bitcoin? Is it Ethereum, et cetera?
Sure. So one thing I've noticed with this community is that their adoption of things are very for practical purposes. And I think that, I mean, everybody here thinks of their reasons as being very practical, but I think that one thing that's exciting to me is that, you know, the move from O status to a more linked data system, you know, using JSON-LD with ActivityPub was for a practical purpose, right? You know, they wanted to be able to do private messages, and it wasn't possible previously in the system, so that was a practical reason to adopt it. The adoption of HTTP signatures and linked data signatures, that was for a practical reason, which was, you know, oh, well, we need to be able to forward messages in the system and make sure that they're private, and, you know, also be able to ensure the integrity of messages passing around the system in various ways. So DIDs and et cetera, I think, so I posted this paper to the network over at Mastodon and related federated nodes, and people got pretty interested in it. I think there may be a number of people who we could encourage to join this group. I think we're most likely to see people pick these up once they see it as being reasonably feasible to implement in their systems. But, I mean, there's a lot of these things do come up. Users complain, for instance, oh, I'm moving from one server to another. How can I actually do that? And right now, the way that it's done is kind of not great. You know, you have to kind of abandon all your previous posts, destroy the threading of your previous messages, and kind of delete your posts from one place and add them to another. So having practical reasons that we could say, hey, we fix your problems by providing this thing, I think would help. So, I mean, partly I think maybe we should try to encourage more people from that community to join this group. And secondly, I think, you know, as we prototype these technologies, I think, you know, we'll see people kind of excitedly pull them in. That's my anticipation from the way that I've seen things that are kind of in our area kind of being adopted within the last many months.
I added myself to the queue to ask a question. In terms of decentralized identifiers, are there any approaches that you've been thinking about leaning, or that you've been leaning to already? Or is it something like a range of the, I won't say easiest, but say, yeah, like lowest hanging ID method providers, you know, you would be open to anything?
Well, so the one thing that I'd say right now is that I think that the number of people, there are some people who are aware of DIDs and are kind of looking at them, but the one thing that I think people are a bit hesitant about are wanting to avoid something that, like, involves kind of too much computational burn, and I think maybe the Bitcoin backend for things is kind of perceived in that, you know, maybe this is true, maybe it isn't, as being, you know, maybe a lot of computational burn. But I don't know. I've partly been, you know, I've talked with, you know, Manu about maybe there's a more fit-for-purpose type blockchain route we could go where, you know, the where maybe that type of concern would not be as strong, or maybe we could try looking at building, you know, DIDs on top of a distributed hash table, though I know a number of people in this group are not excited about that route. I think we're going to have to prototype and actually, you know, build more systems before people can actually kind of, you know, assert, well, these properties are what we want, these properties aren't. But I do think that if we ended up having a system like Mastodon adopting DIDs, you'd have a lot of smaller nodes generating a lot of identifiers, and we'd have to be able to assume that smaller nodes can easily participate in the system, and that having lots of identifiers would not kind of bog down the system too heavily. So those are kind of the things that I've been, the gut feeling that I've been getting from looking at kind of bringing these spaces together.
Great. And we have Christopher Allen on the queue.
Yeah, so if there are any, one, I wanted to comment on the computational load. The computational load is really only on the creation of the identity and identifiers. Validating them is very quick. So it'd be, the first time they create an identity, there might be a delay. There may be also some way that you start off as, sort of a guardian relationship to your first node, but you only move to a self-sovereign when you need to move the first time. Might be another kind of architectural choice. But more specific to some short-term goals, if there are some people that you think are influential and potentially, could be persuaded to check out Rebooting Web of Trust, I'll be glad to send them a personal note or whatever to try to get them involved. And I just need to know who the people are. That's it.
Okay. Cool. And yeah, I wasn't trying to shoot down the Bitcoin back end of things. That's just, you would certainly know better than I would also about.
I think it would be true with any ID. I think there is, the establishing, a DID on, any of the more reliable systems, Ethereum, Bitcoin, even Sovereign, there is a delay. There is a, something that somebody could go, oh no, that means that, people can't, have instant gratification and instantly log in. And I think there may be some ways to get around that for the first in. So, because you don't necessarily
right.
even know if the, maybe we don't want to have a million DIDs if only, the 200,000 of them are actually, need to be decentralized. The rest don't care, or they're used once or twice or whatever. So it also might be a scaling thing to say you only need a DID, convert your identifier to a DID when you wish to transfer for the first time.
Nathan George is on the queue next.
So there's another question that I had for you, whether you guys had been thinking about anything along these lines yet. Is DIDs make it possible to isolate your identity so one context doesn't affect another context? You classically think about that like your work life or your personal life or maybe your political life. And I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts about how the naming systems and the context of identity could be affected by a DID system, and if you'd pursued anything along those lines or would be interested in any collaboration on those topics.
I think I'm trying to fully parse what you said. I think you're partly speaking to people being able to have basically multiple identities and stuff like that. Is that correct?
Well, multiple identities is one way to think about it, but often this manifests itself in the real world in terms of, like, I have private conversations with different groups, and I might share some information with some groups and maybe share less information with other groups. And one thing that current social networks have a difficult time with is you either are completely private or you're completely public, and there's not a whole lot in between.
One thing to note about ActivityPub is that it does support so I don't know how many people on the call are familiar with Diaspora. Probably a lot more people are familiar with Google Plus. But one thing that Diaspora kind of innovated was this ability to have these aspects where you could build kind of curated lists and basically kind of like mailing lists of people that you did want to speak to and didn't want to speak to. And Google Plus adopted that as circles. I don't know if it's actually had as much success as people thought it would, because kind of curating those lists as a user experience is not always a lot of fun. But the way that ActivityPub's addressing is actually pretty granular and pretty powerful in that it has email-style addressing and that you have kind of like two BCC and CC and B2. I don't know why we need B2, but and anyway, you basically give it an array of participants that you want to deliver to their inboxes, but you can also give an activity streams collection as one of the recipients you address. So you could give this a collection which, you know, either you curate or maybe it's some kind of mailing list type thing where a number of people curate. And so you could have this collection that you're like, this is just my friends. I don't want anybody at work to hear about my birthday party. You know, I'm just talking to my friends. And then you can address that to your friends. And in fact, when you submit a post and you submit a post to your followers, every user has a followers collection, which is an activity streams collection. So that's, I know this is not exactly what you're saying, but you started to talk to the, you know, either everything's public or everything's private. So one way that you could tie in with this is that you could also make, you know, you could make one of those collections also be controlled by a DID. You know, so I think there are kind of maybe two different ways that you could look at this. One of them is that an actor in ActivityPub could have multiple profiles using different DIDs to kind of keep those identities separate when they felt like it. Or, you know, they can also address to different collections of actors, which could be, you know, under a traditional HTTPS type identifier, or it could be controlled by some DID. So I think, does that answer your question at all?
Yeah, I think that was a great introduction. Thank you.
And
thank you.
I'd also encourage people who wanted to overview things that the overview section of ActivityPub spec, we tried really hard to make it have a really nice short tutorial that has kind of clear diagrams that you can go through in about 5 to 10 minutes, and it'll give you a hopefully very clear introduction to how the system works. Doesn't mention DIDs or anything, but it should give you a good abstract concept of how it works as a linked data system.
We have Manu on the queue.
Yep, if someone could start, please. Thank you, Chris. You know, as you know, we know of and are big fans of a lot of the social web working group work. So thank you for that. We've also from a corporate standpoint, so specifically from a for-profit corporate standpoint, look at DIDs and the social web protocols as the foundational layer for a number of interesting new products in the future. These are products where people own their data, where they own their identity, where they are able to, you know, freely exchange in legal economic activity. I think a lot of the work that the social web group is working on helps with the messaging aspect, and not just person-to-person messaging, but machine-to-machine and software-to-software messaging. The DIDs help make, DIDs and DDOs help make a lot of this data more portable. And of course, some of you know that the web payments work is going on here. So, you know, I don't think, at least from our perspective, there's a tremendous overlap with these technologies. And I wanted at least everyone else in the group to know that we expect these technologies to converge over the next couple of years. So, you know, while Chris is talking about Mastodon being one potential adopter of this technology, our company is already building the social web stuff into our software platform. Dave can, of course, talk a bit more about that in detail if people want to hear about it. But we are building out for-profit products based on exactly the type of future that Chris is talking about. So just wanted to give a heads up that, you know, this isn't for us, this is not theoretical. This is very concrete, and there are very strong for-profit reasons for implementing these more decentralized technologies. Thanks.
And thanks, Christopher. That was a great overview. I'm going to move us to the DID check-in. So some quick context. We are trying to get everything lined up so that at Rebooting Web of Trust, we can make a solid pass at a draft. We have a lot of issues now that are that we're tracking. We're making progress towards sort of aligning the different DID methods. Christopher Allen, do you want to talk through the entity profile question that we discussed?
Yeah, so basically there has been, you know, in the specs there is a implied concept of this entity information that is a composite of all of the linked data and their associated many signatures, and of which may even not be the same signatures, that all combines into a large JSON-LD object that is an individual's representation of what they know about an entity. And so this has been implied by the specs, but in very few of the examples and implementations is this actually demonstrated in a way that, you know, has made people really realize that there's a structure here. There's also, like, you know, how do you have this in memory when you might have one thing signed by a PEM and another one signed by a you know, a Bitcoin DID, another one, you know, that is you know, has a timestamp on it or whatever. So you can have all of these different kinds of weird things in this data structure, which are each signed in parts. So I'm trying to figure out, like, how can we begin to start making this more prominent and dealing with the issues of, you know, you've got it in memory, especially if you've got it not in JavaScript. Implementations of, you know, how do you, you know, look at this entity? How do we get people to understand that, you know, one person's entity for a DID may be slightly different than someone else's entity for the same DID just simply because of disclosed information to that party? I mean, even your own, even if it's your own self-sovereign identifier and you have an entity, you know, that is yourself, it may not be complete because there may be somebody who's making a claim or a reputation claim about you that you do not know about, that will be different in someone else's system. So, that was kind of my, you know, beginning list of, you know, how do we start talking about this next level higher object that is, you know, kind of the summary of a DDO, of a DID, a DDO, the verified claims associated with those objects, and potentially the DIDs and DDOs of those claims about that object. That's it.
Thanks. I'm on the queue next. And one thing I wanted to, okay, I don't know if I'm understanding, if this is the same thing that you're saying, rather, but as I moved BTCR to more of the framework that we've been lining out in the Verus One issue, I realized the general question, which seemed to tie in with what you were saying, was in this DID spec, this first draft, what is the role of whether it's addressing the verifiable claims ecosystem? So in the thread of, let me point to it actually. In this thread, we are saying, link, okay. You know, there was some talk about the minimum viable, you know, DID spec, and it's, I had some doubts or questions about whether DID spec V1 is meant to just cover authenticating and, let's see, yeah, authenticating as as a DID and updating the DDO, or whether we wanted to walk through some more, some broader verifiable claims scenarios. Per my discussion with Christopher, it seemed like, yes, we wanted to sketch out this sort of broader interaction of DIDs in that ecosystem. That's just my comment slash question. And maybe I should call Manu next because he might answer that.
I will attempt to at least outline our current thinking around that. It's really easy to get wrapped around the axle when talking big picture, especially when talking the technical implementation of the big picture. So what we have found that has given us clarity, at least inside our organization, is to do the same thing that you do in any kind of software engineering project, which is you break the problem down into bite-sized chunks. I think the bite-sized chunks that we have right now are basically the DID spec, which, at least from our standpoint, should do the minimum viable thing that Kim just mentioned, which is, you know, let's start off fairly simple. How do you authenticate as a DID, and how do you update the DDO? And let's figure that out, right? And I don't mean in its finality. I mean take a good first pass at saying this is the data structure there. So we have that work going on in the DID spec. In parallel, we have work going on in the verifiable claims work that talk about the higher level entity profile concept that Christopher just mentioned. How do you make these generalized assertions? How do you compose them together? The verifiable claims work is, or should be, independent of the identifier used. However, and this is of course by design, when you put the decentralized identifier stuff together with the verifiable claim stuff, you get a number of additional really interesting properties to the ecosystem, like being able to have fully portable claims where you can move the claims from one digital wallet to another, having mechanisms where you can do guardianship over identities. Like there are a number of things that you get from that, and the ability to compose all these decentralized things together. So it's that final, you know, when all this stuff comes together, which is what I think, you know, Christopher's questions revolve around is, what does this ecosystem look like when you get all this stuff together? And we should really, and I think what Christopher Allen's saying is, we should really think through all of these things to ensure that all of these basic specs that we have actually truly fit into the ecosystem that we want to create. But of course, the concern there is that until we have really, you know, created a solid foundation with these other specs that we feel work for the higher level stuff, we can get wrapped up having the higher level discussion for quite a while. So again, this is not a proposal on how we. That one way is better than the other. In fact, I think we're going to have to iterate and bounce back and forth between the two. So I would expect that over the next, you know, 6 to 9 months, we're going to do a burst of work on the fundamental core specifications like the DID spec and the verifiable claims data model spec. And then we're going to try to put it together and see if it works for the higher level concerns that Christopher Allen has. And if it doesn't, we're going to come back around and use that information, feed it back into the core specs, and try to expand them to meet some of these higher level problems. Now, all that said, we have been doing that for about 4 years. So we feel fairly confident that the general architecture that we have now is valid. And I think that's why we're trying to nail things down a bit more so that we can do implementations in code across multiple ledgers and validate that this stuff actually does work in production. So anyway, that's our thinking. Currently, DigitalBazaar's thinking is we want to nail down some of these technical details so that we can implement and deploy some of this stuff into production or into controlled pilots, so that we can make sure that this is actually meeting a number of the use cases that we've identified in the verifiable claims use cases document. And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. Lionel is next on the queue.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. That was a perfect lead into what I want to ask, although this might be too low level. To achieve that interoperability, the standards will have to guide people on how to format the identifiers. And I just wanted to either get an answer here, or maybe we'll put a pointer and answer it later. But what can we point to a standard? I mean, last name and first name are easy, but it just gets harder when you go to particularly like location. Is there a standard for expressing location? I'm not talking about state, city, and zip code, but maybe even capturing GPS. So what are the, how do we point to the standards for expressing that? And also at the same time, Chris, have we solved all the data serialization issues? So is JSON LD reliably serialized so it can be hashed no matter what you put in it?
I'll just jump in. I think I'm next in queue. So, Lionel, I'm not sure if we've met all of your requirements, but A, JSON LD, let's be more specific. There is a canonicalization for linked data. That linked data can be represented in a variety of different ways, which includes JSON LD, but there are binary formats, there are other formats, et cetera. And so, you know, we do have ways to canonicize linked data. So that's, problem one. Problem two, which is how do you have a unique identifier that legitimately claim ownership on and uniqueness on, and only that which you've defined in the beginning that has the right to be able to update, et cetera, the data that gives you an identifier that you control that an individual or an object or a computer can control. That's a DID. That DID can refer to a data descriptor object, aka DDO, which can contain additional information about that identifier. That DDO can have things like a self-sovereign verifiable claim that, yes, you know, I call myself Christopher A. That's unique to me as a root. It's not, you know, I'm not attempting to say I'm the only Christopher A. I'm just simply saying I call myself Christopher A. And that, you know, Christopher A's Kim H. is what Kim calls herself in another verifiable claim. So now we've built into a web of trust. If people want to put in verifiable claims from various authorities that have more realness or whatever to an identity, they're welcome to. That's completely a participation only thing. If you want to reveal a location or prove that you're at a location, there are various standards for how to do that, et cetera. So I think that we've met all of your base requirements. We're there. Where we're a little stuck is that in the DID 1.0 draft that was posted, there was a we basically kind of predefined, we said, oh, well, we need a proof to know how to update it. We need a proof to be able to prove that you can, you know, you own or control it, et cetera. And we had some language there that was indistinct. and we were kind of arbitrarily saying these categories, whereas in the newer DDO thing, we're doing it more capabilities-based, which I'm not quite sure if we're quite there yet, but we're going to have one of the world's experts on capabilities at Rebooting. And instead, what we're saying, here are various proofs, and then here's what those proofs can do. So we're kind of turning things around on that, and that's being discussed right now, exactly how to do that. I guess the biggest thing that I'm kind of confused about, which is my question for Manu and Dave, was that in your last kind of rev of this, we still don't have an issuer version of this.
Just so, I followed what you said and it helped me. But just do we, like you say, there's even a claim that you're Christopher. So at what level do we say that that's Unicode? And maybe I'm too much coming from an X509 world where you had those HTML definitions. But do we have definitions for how a name is represented, how a location is represented, how a unique identifying string is represented?
Yeah, so
do we point
let's talk about
standards?
There's a difference. We've got two different things. Representation, no problem. It's schema.org. These can be Unicode data, they can be whatever. The representation, I think, is, you know, relatively solid, used by a wide variety of web things that are internationalized and things of that nature. There are a variety of signature formats for that. That's been described, although we are adding more to them. There's a whole discussion that this community is involved in having more kinds of signature formats than we currently do. That's not a problem. But then when you come to the whole thing of Web of Trust versus, the real name, that's a credential, and that is naturally centralized. There's no way to get around it. It's either I claim I'm Christopher A, and you either trust me or not through whatever side channel you've got, or you accept, say, DMV's DID, and you know that's the Department of Motor Vehicles, and you know that they you trust them, and they make a claim that I am Christopher Ray Allen, at such and such address, and I'm allowed to drive. That's a claim. It's imminently doable with our system. You can mix these together, but it still involves either deciding, channel, you know me, Christopher Allen, you're in Israel, you have no idea about anything with the DMV. You may be much more interested in my root of trust of me as an individual in the Web of Trust version of it than you're interested in the California DMV, who you have no earthly idea of how to verify that they're real or not. So I hope that helps.
So
I did have the question for Manu and Dave on why in the last discussions. I'm not a criticism, but I wanted to kind of understand. You did further clarify on we still have some naming issues on the control versus owner and all of that. But then it felt like without at least one outward bound, issuer key, then you're kind of locked inside the DDO and can never get out. You can never prove anything outside of it other than the ability to update it, whatever. So I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that.
So I have a hard stop at 10. I wanted to make sure everyone knows we're going to have a full meeting dedicated to talking about DID next week, where we're going to have people representing different DID method specs to help go through some issues. So I may drop off, but let's go to Ryan on the queue.
Okay, so if you ask me, I put a link in there to DID Veris 1 Issue 1, which has had a lot of discussion. I think the names, right authorization and authentication credential are great, they seem easier for everybody than proof of ownership and proof of control. I had a little bit of offline talk with Manu about whether this is about more than naming and whether something is broken. Somebody needs to check their mute and go on mute. The good thing that I see is the potential to generalize guardianship, but the bad thing that I want to steer us away from is mixing what goes into a DDO and trying to turn that into a verified claims database. So one question I had about that discussion was, are we talking about putting a verified claim in a DDO, such as somebody has graduated from a college? Because that seems like not the purpose of a DDO.
You at least potentially need to be able to point to a source of verified claims about, not definitive source, but at least a source to be able to bootstrap into these entity records. So you have to have some kind of pointer at minimum.
Okay, so in the language of the DID spec, that is the services, and that exists in the DID spec.
I'm not absolutely sure, but we can talk about that later.
So let me try and
understand what's different other than the names.
Let me try and jump in. And I think we're gonna have to close out the conversation. This is the core part of the discussion, Ryan, that the group needs to have and come to grips with. So the VeriSworn issue that was raised it identified what we believe to be a logical conflation in the DID spec. And this is a logical conflation that we believe everyone's been making, including our organization. And plus the feedback from the BTCR implementation made it even more clear in our minds that we needed to shift some stuff around. So it is not just a naming thing. It is about moving to a more capabilities-based model. It is about making sure that we separate the proper concerns, so we have the right separation of concerns, and we don't accidentally put two things together that shouldn't be tightly bound together. Addressing Christopher's issue, there is no issue or thing only because we haven't focused on it. We expect there to be in the future, but we try to approach this from we try to take all of the BTCR issues and all of the VeriSworn issues that we came to when updating our ledger and a number of things that we've gotten from the Ethereum folks. We tried to synthesize that into what is the core issue that folks seem to be having. And so we wanted to focus on getting the foundation right so that the rest of us could build on top of it. So there's a certain order in which we think that we can discuss these things so that the conversation doesn't go off into the weeds, where decisions that we make at the lower level end up impacting things on a higher level. But you know, where we all want to be at the end of that discussion is making sure that we cover all the use cases that we need. So we believe that we have boiled this down into its essence, but we need to have that discussion with the community. And I think that's what next week's call is going to be about. Ryan,
the feedback I'm giving you is that I've read the links that I've been able to find, like the DIDM versus 1 issue 1. Mm-hmm. And I was unable to understand what the logic error was, and I believe that I should be able to see a concrete example failing if there is indeed a logic error.
Sure. And by logic error, I mean the system's more complicated in its design, because it's a confused deputy problem. Fundamentally, that's the problem, is we had a confused deputy issue.
I understand you told me that, but I looked for a confused deputy problem, and I was unable to find one. And so I'm saying that, like, this concrete failing example is absolutely necessary for me to believe you.
Okay, sure. We can bring that to the discussion next week.
I mean, so what I did see was I saw an urge to generalize the guardianship out of the DID spec and into method specs, but I was unable to find other issues.
Not necessarily. That was not the desire for generalization. But anyway, we're over time. We'll happily provide a concrete example. I'll try to put that in the issue before next week.
Thank you.
Okay,
that'd
thank
be great.
You so much.
And then okay. I just for the purpose of being able to actually begin to issue some simple, you know, Web of Trust verifiable claims, I have to have an issuer thing in it. So it doesn't meet my minimum standard for October 3rd to be able to demonstrate, a signed verifiable claim that is associated with the DID. And if the DID doesn't, if we haven't finalized.
And Christopher, I think the solution to your problem is to have an issuer credential as a part of the DDO. So you're very specifically, you're being very, you know, the problem we had before, and this hopefully answers your question, Ryan. The problem that we had before is we were using a single key to do multiple different things. And unfortunately, when you had delegation, when you handed the ability for someone else to effectively, prove things on your behalf, you accidentally gave them the ability to issue credentials potentially on your behalf. That confusion was created. So what we're saying is very tightly couple what the key's purpose is in the DDO. So we should have a very strict separation between authentication credentials, issuing credentials, and then once somebody has authenticated as another DDO, who has the ability to do write? So write authorization. And we were bundling those things together previously, and we really shouldn't do that because it leads to all kinds of confused FDA attacks. Anyway, I'll try to explain that a bit more. So, Christopher, I think I definitely need
a clearer read on that because I understood the confused deputy. I looked for where that was in the spec, and my reading of guardianship was that guardianship was clear that the guardian had the capability to update, and that the error did not exist in other cases.
I will type something out.
And then you had something for me? Yeah.
Yeah, Christopher, I think your concern is easy to address. It's just another field. We call it issuer credential, and that maps into the model that's been created. It's not in there right now, clearly, but that's an easier thing to do.
Thank you. Okay, so Kim had to log out. Basically, again, to recap, we're going to have a discussion next week where we've got two Ethereum, the BTCR, and if I can get somebody from Blockstack, we'll get them as well to talk about kind of, now that we're iterating on DIDs, what requirements are we missing, say, from the Ethereum community in particular, because they have not been represented in this latest discussion. So we're going to be devoting most of our time next week to that. In the weeks following, we have two more sessions. We're going to be talking about other things related to, bootstrapping and making the Rebooting Web of Trust the best it can be to address these W3C credentials things. So we're going to be devoting the month of September to those discussions. And that's it. And everybody have a good week, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks all. Bye.